This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 482, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I used to be a rolling stone, you know. If a cause is right, I'd leave to find an answer on the road. I used to be a heart beating for someone, but the times have changed. I say the more my work gets done.
Hello and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 482. Something happened to my voice in there I wasn't happy about, but I'm gonna push forward. You heard that, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm Josh Flanagan. Here with my co-host Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
I don't know. It got reedy. We are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of them, or we try, and then one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book, the other books from the week, and other stuff. Sometimes more other stuff. Listener mail, whatever. What have you. Discussions. We like it. It'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There will be spoilers. So you know that. We understand how that works. You're warned. Connor, you're up.
So before I jump in, just to expand on what Josh just said, much like last week's show, this week's show is going to be light on actual comics because I only read 7 books this week. I don't know how many you read.
I read probably a little more than that, maybe 8 or 9, I think.
Yeah, so there wasn't a whole lot to talk about, so it'll be fewer comics than normal, more listener mail and stuff like that. So I guess that's the status quo until Convergence is over. Uh-huh. Until then, the Black Hood number 3 from Dark Circle Comics, which is an imprint of Archie, was the pick of the week, written by Dwayne Swierczynski, drawn by Michael Gatos, letters Rachel Deering, colors Kelly Fitzpatrick. We've talked about every issue of this series so far, and I quite liked the first issue. Wasn't sure what to make of the second issue, it was pretty crazy, but with the third issue now, I feel like they've settled into what this book is, the tone, the setting, the characters. This is the first issue we really have a sense of where this is going. It's a hero origin story, obviously, and we're finally taking steps to get to that part. The first couple issues were just this guy getting really just beaten down by life and the world and corruption and badness, and he's finally starting to pull out of that skid with this issue and take steps to becoming the Black Hood. And I really like the atmosphere. Dwayne Swierczynski is a native of Philadelphia, which is where this book takes place, and I spent not a ton of time there, but some time there, having grown up and lived in New York for a long time. And it feels very authentic. It feels Philadelphia. I think it's described in this issue even that it's a small town, big city, and it feels like that in this story. And the sort of characters they don't feel like New York characters, which is what you get in so many of these comics. They feel like they're in Philadelphia. And I like that authentic feel.
You hear that accent,
yes,
is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I can't do that accent, but I know it when I hear it.
It's just a very angry accent.
Yeah. angry Bam Margera.
It just feels very, very authentically true. And I like that this main character...
Paul Montgomery, I think. Just my guess.
Werder. I'm just going to call him the Black Hood because I don't know what his name is.
It's Hedinger.
Right.
Officer Hedinger.
He's a very unique character.
Head injury. See?
Oh, there you go. He's a very unique character. He is an ex-cop. He's got half his face sort of blown off. He is a drug addict, but he is trying to do good because in his heart he's still a cop who was a good guy before all this bad stuff happened to him. And in this issue, he is he's laying off the pills as best he can. He's doing speech therapy, which I thought was a neat trick. The speech therapy is helping him create his superhero voice.
Christian Bale did it. I mean, right. It makes sense.
And he's starting to work his way up the chain of drug dealers to find out who it was that framed him in the last issue. And then that's causing problems now, because now the drug dealers are realizing he's a problem too. So I think there's a lot of fun stuff, interesting stuff going on here. I like the tone. I like the setting. It feels very noirish in a way. Everybody's sort of bad, except for the speech therapist, which means something bad will happen to her eventually. I just really like it. I like the action's great. I think the Michael Gatto's art is really strong. I don't usually get to see his art very much, and I always did like his stuff. So I think I like everything about this book right now.
I read all three of them today, in an effort to be a team player.
Look at you! Look at you being a team player.
I know. I try. I can't say I loved it.
Right.
I don't know that. I can see why you like it, and it's not even as bad. It's real grim.
Yes.
And also, like, it's actually visually very dark. If I had a problem with it, it's. So I was going through the pages and I was like, this just is a, it's, there's a lot of black, almost, I think, to the detriment of clearer storytelling at certain points. Mm-hmm. And I like Gatiss a lot, but I do have a little bit of trouble telling people apart. There's definitely an issue with that where a lot of the people kind of look the same. And there's so much ink on the page, or digital ink, I don't know how he's doing it these days, that it made it, I think, a little unclear for me. Right. You can always tell who the main guy is because his face is messed up, as long as his right side is facing the camera, I guess. And I can kind of like we see his partner, but it's always kind of the back of his head. And he's kind of, I guess he's like either a black guy or he's got darker skins. You can kind of tell him. But like, I think this was the first issue, though, that I liked the main character at all.
Right.
Because it was, you spent two issues where him just feeling sorry for himself and watching him dig a hole. And I find that really difficult as a thing to read. So this one where he said a line, he said something like, I feel like I'm a cop again.
Right.
I mean, I really like that. I like the redemptive sort of value. Well,
that's why this issue particularly was the pick over the others, is because he's pulling out of that hole. And he had to dig the hole to get out of it.
And also, it's I think it's really hard to a guy who fully succumbs to his pill addiction to be like, yeah, go you. And so the fact that he was able to, like, you know, he's trying to pull out of it. And that is a little more relatable to me than just watch him sink deeper and deeper and make worse decisions. And I think that later that contrast will make that an even more satisfying decision.
Right.
But it is super grim. It's the Jeremy Renner of comic books. It's just there's no humor.
I wouldn't say it's humorless.
It's pretty. But what was funny about it?
This particular issue, or just in general?
Yeah, I don't remember a lot, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that, and I don't really even want it to be like a laugh a minute. But it's, I mean, when they said these are Dark Circle comics, they weren't kidding. I mean, they come with the eyes, the dark eye circles under them, like they're grim. It's kind of an ugly world. But I will say, like, it's interesting, and I want to see where it will go from here, because I think that this was a good issue. This is probably the best of them, sort of.
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting that how your tastes are evolving.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really like grim stories anymore.
Not really. But I've also read them all. not really, but like I've that's just had a bunch true. Of them. And that, you know, that's dope, but that's totally true. I was thinking the other day about how, like, I think of myself as a guy who likes crime stories, and I don't know that I do anymore.
Yeah.
At least, you know, a certain flavor of them. I think I like caper stories. But
like heists.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff's really fun. There's totally like a shift that's happening in my tastes. But that, you know, good. That should be happening. That should be happening to everyone.
So I like it. I think if you're into crime stories, into sort of darker stuff, this is a really good.
It's quite hard bitten.
It is quite hard bitten.
You know, I was thinking. I was actually thinking about this. I don't know. Probably from, I want to say, about 7 a.m. until probably 2 p.m.
Good. That's a good bit of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, listen. It's not. It's not as much as we would hope, but no. You got stuff to do. But I was thinking about like how, like something like Parker, which is really just as grim, sort of. It just has a different aesthetic to it, I guess. And I don't know if it's the fact that it's sort of retro, you know, like it's from a different time that gives it a different flavor than the, something like this. But I like that more. I don't know.
You like the 60s aesthetic.
Oh, definitely. As opposed to now.
Yeah.
Because if it's now, I just feel horrible. Yes, pills are a problem. inner city violence is quite depressing. That's right.
So if you do like that, then the Black Hood is the book for you right now.
Mm. A lot of smart stuff going on in it, though. I like the media angle particularly. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that things happened and happened very fast.
Right.
Let me ask you a question about this. And I know that we're trying to sort of, we don't really, but when they call the, like, not the hit on him, but the frame job for it, which I think was in the second issue.
Yes, that was the second issue.
Did we know who that character is? Or was that the first time we saw them?
I think it was the first time we saw
them. Okay. I was like, I think I missed something, but I don't think I do because I just read this right now. So.
Yeah, no, I think that was the first time we saw them. The first issue was basically all of him getting in the altercation, getting shot, and then and then going a little nutty from being unable to speak. And
yeah.
So
that speech therapist is fucked.
The only light in a world of darkness will always get stomped on in these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Always. So I'm sorry, Dr. Dupree. Bad things happen in your future. So this week, I don't know if you saw, Josh, there were some opinions about all new X-Men 40 that came out this week.
Oh my God, he's wicked gay!
So this is the issue. What was funny about this issue was it was the first one after that crossover with the Guardians of the Galaxy that we totally ignored. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of time going,
wait. Yeah, I was excited about that.
Wait, what? And then also this issue also featured Indiana Jones.
There he is, yep. He hates snakes.
Who's the artist on this? It's Mahmoud Asrar. Does not like to draw fedoras, clearly. So this issue, the X-Men have all returned with Cyclops in tow from space. Apparently, Angel has now some cosmic wings, which I'm not thrilled about. But
and a hood?
And a really dumb hood.
I was like, oh, that design. Like, ooh.
It's not even a full hood. It's like a half hood. Yeah, how comfortable could that possibly be?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. As a man who has hair that seems similar to this character's hair, that's a problem right there. That's going to leave a ridge right in your hair all the time, which is aesthetically not pleasing, but also it's just uncomfortable.
And it's going to the front hair is going to poof out
over
the hood.
Plus, that guy's flying around. Wind is an issue.
Right.
He's going to get flyaways at the least.
That is just a bad idea. On top of these bad idea costumes.
Yeah.
You know, they found a way to make these worse by giving one of them a half hood.
I was a little unhappy that Scott Summers had returned from space. I was like, oh, leave him out there. I know that series ended, so it's not really a thing, but...
He returned to hamburgers, so there you go.
Yeah, he really likes that hamburger. A whole page of... I will tell you, that's where he lacks in fedoras, I think he really nailed eating a hamburger.
Yes.
Mamo did.
So in this issue, Jean Grey takes young Bobby aside and says, hey, why are you always acting all horndoggy when you're gay? Which seems like a violation because she's a psychic and pulled it out of his head. But there you have it. That's the big controversy this week.
There's a couple of issues there.
Right.
That are separate. Okay, I don't have strong feelings on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of don't care.
Right.
And also, because one thing, apparently this is the older Bobby... Is not gay.
Well, that was that.
Which is a problem.
Well, at first I thought this is interesting because he says, but my older self isn't gay. But then the next page, he's like, well, he's probably just deeply in the closet.
Yeah.
Which, okay, if that's what you're going
to
do.
Feel like you have to do that.
Right.
And so let me, I don't even feel like I should need to preface this. I'm down with gay. Whatever. I'm totally fine with it. This felt a little out of nowhere.
It did.
I have no problem with A, changing characters who have been established. I have no problem with gay characters. I don't know where this comes from, though. It just seemed like it was out of the blue so that they would have
something. Well, it's funny because when I saw the headlines, one of the new X-Men's or one of the old X-Men's going to be turn out to be gay, I tried not to read the headlines. Of course, it was spoiled for me by everyone. Thanks, everyone. First, I thought it was going to be Hank.
That was my instinct as well.
It would have made sense for me for Hank.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I thought about it as I was reading it, and Bobby's kind of a blank slate.
I agree.
He was the X-Men that for years they just never used.
He was the account.
You know, up until basically the Jean Grey school storylines, until basically recently, the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He was an X-Men that just was never used.
I agree.
So that in that sense, okay, fine. It did feel like, well, just a change to make a change.
Well, that, you know, having him be gay isn't necessarily the same as giving him a personality.
Right. They have to actually do something with him.
Right, and his personality can't be he's the gay guy who makes quippy gay guy jokes, because that has been done to
you
death.
You want to make him Charles Nelson Reilly?
No, not that kind. you know, just the one who's in the background, you know, he is cute, which right. is, they already started.
Right.
I mean, they right away were like, well, Angel's pretty, and I was like, come on, that's it felt reductive to me.
Right.
So
they really should have been talking about the really bad fashion choice of his hood. That's what they should have been talking about.
I'm not touching that, what you just said. Because, to be honest, we all could have those. We just spent 10 minutes talking about it. It's not. Yeah, it just felt like it was a thing, and maybe it will be made up later. But I don't know.
It did feel sort of, we're just going to do this to do this. I don't have a problem with it. Just. And I'm not an Iceman expert enough to know if this is wildly out of character or not. It seems kind of, because as they talk about here, you know, we just did have years of Bobby having relationships. Now, that doesn't mean gay men don't have relationships with women when they're in the closet. Happens all the time. But it just felt a little strange.
Well, it felt strange because I think for the first time, I was like, oh, I'm getting a handle on who this guy is. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who should be very confident, but isn't necessarily. And now he's finally like, you know, he hooks up with Kitty, and like, that's great. And I was like, oh, good for him. I'm happy for him. And oh, it didn't work out because he's kind of stupid,
right.
or he's immature. But I guess it's a valid reason. I don't know. I would give it more time.
Yeah, as you said, it's all gonna be about the execution.
Yeah, but yeah, that happened. That's basically like, okay, that's fine.
But you're right. If he then becomes sort of the walking, talking gay stereotype character, then that's going to be annoying.
Not even the stereotype. It's whatever the new version, because it used to be the old stupid stereotype, which is the swishy and the wrist right. and everything. But there's like a new, like, it's the gay best friend. It's right. it's which is the new black friend, which is right. the new, you know, like.
The catty, sort of funny and mm-hmm. pithy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a thing that we see a lot. And I know guys like that. It's not like it's not a real thing, but it's a very comfortable pocket to put a character into. And you know, it's an X-Man. He's got mutant powers. You could have him not be that.
Right.
And I would like that more than if that's what happens.
You don't want him wearing an ascot. You don't want him to be a 70s gay character.
I got to tell you, though, if they if they did that with the costumes where, you know, like. You know, at least it would be something to talk about for a week. That's the best I can say about that.
Which is all we want at this point.
I'm sorry. Is an ascot a gay thing?
Well, I went back to the Charles Nelson Reilly thing.
Okay. No, fair. I like that. That is where.
That's where my head goes for a 70s gay character.
Right. Okay.
He was in all the shows I watched.
I watched a lot
of Hollywood Squares.
Wasn't Jack Tripper basically dressed the same?
He didn't wear an ascot. He had a really wide
shirt. I feel like he might have at times.
Think about the character that Bruce Greenwood played in Mad Men and dressed like that.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Hold on. Thinking about the character that Bruce Greenwood played in Mad Men. I'm going to need a minute. And this is what I'm saying. We're all on a spectrum.
Right. Right. All right. So let's talk about Velvet number 10. This was the issue in which it's not really an end of an arc. It's hard to tell with this book. What did you think of this issue?
I thought that this was, it was too long between this one and the last one for me to remember what happened
right.
exactly. So I was like, oh, this is like the very next step after what just happened. And so.
Which we loved. We loved that last issue. So
yeah,
much.
Exactly. So once I remembered, which, you know, like, and then I sort of snapped back to the beginning. I was like, all right. I really liked the twist that unfolded over the course of the issue a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the biggest move that had been done in the issue so far. And it was the first time that she got outplayed by the guy who had been in the cell for a really long time. And his deception and his. I guess betrayal got bigger and bigger, and I liked that momentum of it a lot. Like, oh, he betrayed me. And then later, like, oh, he really screwed me.
He's a very formidable character.
Yeah.
And that's going to be really fun because you're right. At this point, she's been two steps ahead of everybody, sort of the invincible character.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch the sort of the sexy older lady that everybody thought was over the hill and didn't really ever have it in the first place to just be like, no, I've got you all beat. And so we are all feeling super confident in her just as she is. She's just going through the motions, taking care of everything. And this just knocked her to the ground in like the biggest way. And I thought that was a really fun narrative move.
Plus a lot of high flying action in the beginning. There's a chase on top of a train, which is always fun because I always like to think about running on top of a train.
I like gendarme following them in their little hats.
They're so not intimidating. It's hard to take them seriously.
They were like
hats.
The They were like the German soldiers in Band of Brothers. Like, they were just basically faceless people. You just could say, oh, he's got that hat. And right. I think they all had the mustache. Like, they're basically all Batroc the Leaper. Like, it was just random French guys with mustaches and those hats.
Right.
And they just get punched and shot. That's what they're for. So question
yes.
here being, yes. At the very end, there's the reveal in the epilogue.
Yes.
That guy who killed those people, is that the one from the train?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just couldn't find the issue.
Yeah, so the guy who she's helped escape, who jumped off the train last issue, showed up in London and shot, let's see. One of these guys is the guy in charge.
The beard guy.
Yes.
The boss guy. The other one I'm not as sure about. I know.
He's the investigator, right?
He's, I don't know. He's British.
The guy that's been dogging Velvet for a while. That's what I think.
Okay. Is he the agent who like was the one who was like, I never trusted her, that one?
He might be. They look very similar.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are two. He gets shot, looks like in the heart, so he's down. And then the boss guy gets shot through the hand into the shoulder, and then he's dead too, I guess.
A television character looked like they got shot in the heart as well, and that character did not die on a program that I watch and will not spoil. Sorry, it doesn't matter.
We really love Velvet, and if you don't want to have the problem of going, wait, which was that guy again? Then the best way to do that is to read a collection of Velvet.
Or simplify your life greatly.
And the best way to get that collection is go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find the link to Amazon. You can go buy that Velvet trade. In fact, the first one's out, and this is the second arc, part 5. And I think he says in the back, this is going to wrap up the second trade. So pick up those trades from ifanboy.com/Amazon. You can read these stories and not be confused about the guys who are all vaguely similar looking white dudes with black hair. It's not our fault. Maybe make one of them blonde is what I'm saying.
I kind of don't care because I love Epting's timeless.
No, I don't care either. Art. And it's really about her. And it's kind of fitting that there's a sort of a faceless army of dudes chasing
men.
Her.
Yeah. Right. I like that. That works.
Check us out at ifanboy.com/Amazon. You can go to ifanboy.com/registration where you can become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. That's how you can help the show directly. Both of these ways are how people help keeping the show going. And we appreciate everyone. Who does that?
I want the book. I want Velvet to be printed on like old on 70s sort
on
of
Velvet?
News. Yeah, I want Velvet. No, I don't want that. No, I want Velvet to be printed Velvet. Like a book from the 70s, and then I want them to leave them for like 3 or 4 years just in a crate and let them age, and that's how I want to read that
That'd
book.
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be great? And you open it, and it smells like old paper.
Right.
That's some concept. You just kickstart that. That's what I'm saying. That's free. You can have that for free.
So you dropped off Satellite Sam a while ago, correct?
No, never. No,
oh, I thought. You didn't like it.
I said I had tired of some of it.
I thought you said you hated it and it was the worst thing being published.
the 2004 John Kerry of our popular culture. No, I didn't say that at all. I said, I think a little while back I was getting a little bored with it.
Yes.
But I really like this book, so I give it a long runway, basically.
So in this issue, we finally find out how the father died. What's his name?
Not Mike.
So bad.
It doesn't matter.
The whole point of this book has been that the star of Satellite Sam was found strangled to death in his bed, and his son, who was cast to replace him as Satellite Sam, has been investigating the murder, and that's sort of been in the background to about 15 different plot lines. And in this issue, we find out that he died in an accidental sexual asphyxiation.
With amyl nitrates. With amyl poppers.
Amyl nitrates and his boss's wife. And it was an accidental strangling in bed to heighten his orgasm.
He so, Michael Hutchins himself.
I don't know.
That's wrong. Sorry.
I don't. It almost felt like I didn't really care because there's so much else going on in this book now.
I care because, I mean, the character was super driven, like, tell me, show me. And I was like, all right, that's forcing it a little bit, but that's so you can get into this scene. And honestly, like, I just like the aesthetic of the book, so I kind of don't care.
No, that's what I mean. Like, but at this point in time, the mystery of who killed him is sort of like secondary to the world and the characters, and it's fine. Okay, so what does it mean that it was an accident? Does that have any bearing on the story or not? We'll see, I guess. But really, there's a lot going on here, that, including the Ku Klux Klan wearing fedoras.
Oh, that's how you draw a fedora, by the way.
Trying to lynch the secret black character off a lamppost, which was pretty terrifying.
We don't know how that ended.
Right, well, it was the cliffhanger.
Yeah, but there's a little more after that. This is a cliffhanger for that. That's pretty rough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't ever get less challenging or less difficult to sort of read. And I really like that character's storyline and his position, his outlook, where he exists in time and his point of view on it. It's very interesting. You know, like, he's right at the cusp of being famous can sort of de-racialize you.
He has visions of the future, which Fraction uses to, you know, he's a little too smart about the future. Like, we're going to take selfies and have a thing called Instagram. Like, it's his visions of the future of TV, Eugene's visions, are a little too on the nose. But
it's true. But you know what? I didn't even think about it that way when I was reading. I was like, wow, this guy really figured it out. I totally thought that.
Yeah.
It's like, that's wow. How do you know? You just popped my bubble. That's wow. That was unlike me.
But he's a great character. And I like that there's a lot of different dynamics going on here. And there's the political angle. There's the cast fighting with each other. There's a lot of different fun. This is like watching a TV drama. There's lots of different plot lines and they come and go. But they've sort of finished the mythology, if you will, of this story. And although it does end with the cliffhanger with the son driving with a can of gasoline and all those nudie pictures to the Dr. Ginsburg's house. So clearly something bad's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Although it's not really Dr. Ginsburg's fault that his wife accidentally strangled his dad, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I don't know, because it seemed like they were all fairly open. Right. You know, it wasn't like that, but who knows? I love looking at this book.
Yes.
Both for aesthetic and even prurient reasons, I will admit to all of it. Like, it's just so goddamn good looking, and it's sexy. Like, it's just a beautiful book, and the textures of it just drive me insane. Like, I just want to stare at it.
Yeah, it's a great. I still really like it.
Yeah,
and we hadn't talked about it in a while, so it's good that we talked about it. So now I'm going to say something that I hope you don't put me up against the wall for.
I know where this is going, and I think
I didn't like this issue of Lazarus.
I didn't either.
Okay, good. I was worried about your reaction, and I've been nervous.
It's
about this
okay whole to not like an issue of Lazarus,
right?
But it is not okay to stop reading it,
right? Okay,
that's or fine. To not that's fair. Start reading it.
That's totally fair.
Okay, I found it difficult to read. Just from almost from a mechanic standpoint, the font that they use, because a lot of it was basically a journal entry.
I hate these cursive fonts.
I do too. I find them difficult to read, and I don't think they add very much. And I get it. It's a valid aesthetic choice, but I just think it slows me down. And then you put, you know, it's all there's a lot of graphic design of different documents and things in this that Eric Trautman did for this book. Right. I like Eric very much. I think it's good work. But I feel like it interrupted a narrative flow.
You know, it was a story of the nun who we met a couple of issues ago.
Which is a super interesting story. Like, the actual story points and beats and the things that happened, I was super interested in. I just don't think it was executed in the most efficient way.
Yeah, so she's apparently a spy because the nuns are allowed to travel between the realms and help people. And they are basically providing medical care for the waste. But she is allowed to do this only by being a Carlisle spy against the Hawk. Regime, and I just didn't really care, honestly.
I don't mind that part. I just literally I didn't like reading all the cursive.
Like that either, and that may have affected my not caring, because after a while I was just like, when is this issue going to be over?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's fine.
So that was disappointing, because I love this book and I was excited to see an issue, but
well, listen, 1 for 16.
15 and 1 is a good record in any book.
And I don't expect there to be a lot of this, but also, you know, it's there. I like experimentation. I like them playing around. I'd seen Rucka talking about this on the social media. Like, it was a big deal to him. They went for a thing. I didn't necessarily love it, but, you know.
Yeah. I'm not mad at them.
Ain't mad at you, baby. Wanted to touch in on Invisible Republic number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Number 1 was the pick of the week. This is by Gabriel Hardman, Karina Becko, and Jordan Boyd on colors. I picked the first one. It was pick of the week. And I guess I just wanted to check in that I really liked this one, too.
Mm-hmm. I like this one more than the first one.
Me, too. It fleshed out everything. I actually know what's going on, whereas before there was sort of a first act kind of mystery, cold open mystery. Whereas this, like, I got to know where we were and who everyone was, and I was very much into it.
Well, the camera pulled out a little bit. We got to learn about the world a little more as these two characters who we met in the first issue who were basically, you know, living on the run, killed some soldiers, now have entered the world, so we get to see that.
We also know that this guy is going to become a huge dictator, which is really fascinating.
Well, we can totally see it.
Yeah.
But then there's also the secondary story of the present day, in which this reporter has been investigating. He's found this journal written by the dictator's cousin, and that's how we see the flashbacks. And his attempt to investigate, his attempt to get the story published at all, him running up against some people who don't want the story published anywhere, anytime, has been interesting. I thought this was a much stronger issue than the first one.
Yeah, I agree. I will tell you exactly what it is that I love about Gabriel Hartman's art. It's right here.
Is the action goes left to right?
Always. And the thing that's important is in front. Those are just basics that everyone should be following.
Right.
Second page, dude standing there in his jacket.
Hold on.
Look on his jacket, like in his armpit, basically, and that's just a big fat brush stroke. Like it just you can see where the brush went, you know, right, left, and twirled around.
Right.
And I love that. I love seeing that on the page. And he says something in the end of this about how he doesn't do digital. Like, right. He's still ink and paper. And did you read his little bit at the end?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So I'm just going to read a bit, just so you know. I got to find the part. I'm often asked about my drawing process for comics. And as an easy dodge, I just say that I don't pencil. I jump straight into inks. This isn't entirely true. Look, you're just going to have to get used to the fact that I'm not always going to be honest and forthright with you. But at this instance, on this page, that's going to change. I scanned. Yes, I still draw my comics traditionally with ink on paper. I just like that he was like, I'm going to lie to you. You're going to have to deal with it. And it was my favorite thing I read this week.
That's fantastic.
That sentence. I wanted to quickly touch on Captara, number one.
That's not a real thing.
It is. It's written by Chip Zdarsky, who most people know as the artist on Sex Criminals, which is the other Sexy Time book that Matt Fraction does, with art by Kagan McLeod. Now, Kagan McLeod is an artist who I've known for a while, hasn't really ever gotten to be a big thing. He did a book called Infinite Kung Fu, came out for Top Shelf. I really like his style. And this is a wacky space adventure kind of book. I don't know that I'm willing to make a ruling on it yet. There's a couple of overwrought sort of film references that are just to be jokey for us, and I hate that.
Right.
That you don't belong in the middle of this for so much, but I guess you could say it humanizes them. But it's like a Lost in Space kind of thing. They all have silly outfits, and there's aliens and weird stuff, and the colors are very bright. It's pretty good. I'm going to say, if what I said sounds like fun, check it out. I'm going to check back in to tell you what I think of these other ones, but I really like Kagan McLeod's art. Super fun cartoony stuff. Did you read Deadly Class number 12?
Yes.
Issue is fine. Whatever. Did you read the letter at the end of that?
No. I skipped all letters page this week.
Oh, man, there's a long letter, like it's over a page and a half of the back of a guy writing in to tell Rick why his work means something to him. And basically, this guy just tells the story. And I know that I'm now focusing on the story that a letter wrote in rather than the story of the book. But I don't even normally read things.
Right. Yeah.
But right away, I was, you know, the guy's like, he just wrote all this stuff. And he goes, listen, I hate oversharing. I hate it. It makes me feel weird. But then he totally does it. He tells his whole story. He basically starts off with, I'm the son of a murderer. And this is why your books are important to me. And I was riveted to this letter. So check that out in case you missed it. And I also like what happened with the Deadly Class guy.
Talk about high action, this was a high action issue too.
Certainly. But there was a bit at the end where like the spurned girlfriend got over it. And they sort of discussed why they were like that. And I was like, oh, good. Like, I like that. I want the characters to be friends with each other. That's like, I always want that.
I want everybody to get along.
No, I like the idea of a team that are strong and together. It's like West Wing, season 5. They did, but they all believed in each other. They presented a united front, even if they didn't inside, because they still all had everybody's backs. I just a thing I like. So then they're all arguing with each other when Sorkin left, and I was like, this isn't right. Same kind of thing.
It's funny how the older you get and the more kids you keep adding, it's like, I just want no more conflict.
That's not it.
I want everyone to be happy and quiet.
This is a constant thing for me. I like teamwork. I like sort of the competent people working together. And so when the girlfriend, and I don't remember anybody's name, as has been made abundantly clear, like when they have to face these horrible odds together. Everything I've ever written has like a super good best friend. Mm-hmm. I like you, for example.
Yeah, but I well, all right.
Okay, no, okay.
I've been stunned by your open emotion, and I don't know what to do.
It's okay.
Other than move on to the audience questions.
Yes, we can do that.
Those are the comics we want to talk about. You can go to fanboy.com, and you can find
the
post.
The shark.
Post for
the
show.
Done that.
Show, and you can comment on those books there if you want at ifanboy.com. We have a bunch of emails since we had hardly any books this week, although we're pretty close to being on normal time. Brian W. writes and says, I recently watched the new Batman v Superman trailer, and my distaste for it was so strong that I felt a need to reread some DC classics. I love DC Comics, but don't care for most of their current output. When I feel like I need to read the classic DCU vibe, I turn to books like New Frontier, Geoff Johns' Hawkman, and older minis like Sword of the Atom. So where do you turn when you need a heavy dose of classic DC nostalgia?
That's a really good question, and a very apt and well-timed question.
Yes.
You named my number one, straight up, is New Frontier.
Yes.
It is, to me, it is perfect. It is. Like, I look at it on the shelf regularly, and I'm like, I'm glad that's there.
Yes.
And I can always look at it up, and I can look at those big 3-4 panel pages and the color that Dave Stewart did, and I just go, it's possible to get it right.
Yes.
And I don't think of it as a 60s story, even though it is. I don't. I think of it as a DC story.
I'd say JLA Year One.
That was my, damn it. The next thing I was going to say.
Mark Wade, Barry Kitson one. Why don't you talk about it then?
I actually just downloaded it. I have it all here ready to reread. I had just been finishing up some other stuff, and I'm gonna be rereading. I haven't in a while, but I just remember it's got those nice, clean Kitson lines.
Yeah, the art's clean, and you have those magical back-to-basics Mark Wade characterizations that are smart, and they work, and makes you just feel good.
How do you feel about Grant Morrison's JLA in this instance?
In the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, it really depends on what classic DCU vibe means to you, right? I mean, I tend to think of older comics than that, but...
Yeah.
I mean, those are still great DC comics, and that I think
I tend to think of, and I can even narrow this down to, like, I want a Flash without a lot of lines, so it makes me think of Carmine Infantino.
Okay.
Like, where his head is just one circle line that goes around it instead of Jim Lee, basically. I mean, that's what I'm getting at. You know, like, I think of very clean...
You think his costume doesn't need all these ancillary lines and things, huh?
No, it doesn't. And, then, like, with him is always the one that stands out because it's a field of red. And he's not as bulky, so they don't necessarily tend to draw as many muscles as, say, on Superman.
Right.
He's more light.
Yeah, he's thinner. He's usually portrayed as being thinner.
Yeah. So that's what I think of, which is why I just, you know, I mentioned Barry Kitson. I mentioned Darwin Cook stuff. And, you know, obviously those have those things to them.
But there's also things like, I mean, if you want to be more modern, I think of the Geoff Johns JSA run.
Yeah, that was my next one.
But I also look back at, like Jim Aparo drawn Batman stuff and that sort of era, the Batman the Outsiders era. And I mean, really, there's a lot. The thing about it is there may not be new stories that fit that mold, but there's 60 years of other great stories that do.
That you could never read all of. You know what I just read for the first time?
What?
I read that Alan Moore book, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, but then all the other stuff that comes in it.
Yes.
And I read the whole thing, and it was... It was great. That's a wonderful Superman story.
Yes, it is.
And it's not. It's funny because you know we always sort of refer to Alan Moore, 1986. He's the guy who had a big hand in kickstarting it, and it is not that. It's not that at all. It's a guy with like an amazing like love and reverence for the golden and silver age.
He 100% loves it.
Yes,
I mean that's anyone who reads those things. That's clear.
As does Grant Morrison. Really, it just it comes out in a different way.
Oh, Grant Morrison totally loves it too.
Yeah.
He loves it, but I read that book too. I have that book.
So check that out. Actually, I think that might be a good one. That if you've never read it, that's like a really nice. And there's a couple of other stories in there. There's a Swamp Thing story in there. There's a Green Lantern story.
Yes,
I think.
The Green Lantern one's good, isn't that the Mogo one?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
That's a good one. So there you go, Brian. There's some stuff. That's just some of the stuff we like to read.
Adam L. from Dayton, Ohio. Am I the only one who gets annoyed at all these subpar analogs, versions, and clones, literally in some cases, that the publishers can't seem to get enough of? I know it's been going on for years, like the Marvel family, but enough is enough. The tipping point that had gotten me so fed up is this unnecessary trend are all the Spider characters. They have now surpassed the Bat family of characters in Ridiculous. Peter Parker Spider-Man, Miles Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Scarlet Spider, Spider-Man 2099, Spider-Girl, Arana, Spider-Gwen, Silk, Kane, you could even include Venom and all the symbiote characters, but I'm sure I've missed some. Spidey is just the most recent annoyance. Characters like Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, Wolverine, Hulk, and they've all been victims of this cloning process. Why do publishers insist on churning out these versions of popular characters? Does it really get them that much more revenue? Do fans really want to see slightly different copies of mainstay characters? And can't we just let the character be the character? Agree, disagree, love it, hate it, thoughts? Question mark.
Publishers like money.
I don't fully think that it is. I actually emphasize the word revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's fully about that. Sometimes, well, A, families are different than analog characters. Now, analogs are actually different than versions. Analogs are like Superior is an analog of Superman, so you can tell a Superman story without telling it with Superman. Watchmen is like that.
Right.
Those are different things than what I think that he's talking about. Different versions. The Spider-Man ones are probably are a good example. I think there's lots of different versions of Spider-Person, but I think it's partially revenue based, obviously, because it's all a business decision. But if I'm a writer, it might be hard to look at Peter Parker and be able to come up with a new take on it. So you switch it around a little bit. You put something in. I mean, like, we could all say at the beginning, Ultimate Spider-Man's like, what's the point? We already have Spider-Man. But they did something really interesting with Ultimate Spider-Man for a long time. And in that case, the Jessica Drew character that came, that is who this clone is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she's a Spider-Man clone. She's interesting. You know, like, so I think it has to do somewhat with how it's done. I guess you could be...
I think it's almost purely a business decision. Because people like... It's all about branding. Remember when all the books became Avengers books and all the books became Justice League books? It's because people buy those things with the name of the important thing on it.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right, Josh. The family's different than the knockoffs. I mean, I wouldn't call...
Yeah.
They're all kind... All these characters you list are kind of versions of Spider-Man, but they're not all Spider-Man versions.
Right. But in some ways, like, when he said Batman, I call that one out as, I love Batman's family.
Yeah,
like,
that's a family. What makes that's the book. Not knockoffs.
Chuck Dixon... late 90s, early 2000s Batman family books. That's another one of those DC ones. But also, that's a really good example of when this works.
But if anything, it's those aren't Batman knockoffs. Those are Robin knockoffs.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, they're just like sort of his sons. It's a bigger part.
What I mean is they're not knocking up Batman with Robin and Nightwing and all those characters. Those are all versions of sidekicks, and that's just his family. Green Lantern, they're a core of cops.
But
so there's a lot
about
of them.
What about the different colored lantern core?
Right.
Now, that is definitely that's which we liked at the time. And then it was like, okay, that's enough.
No more.
That's it. And it's still going. I remember going, God, that's, that's a, why didn't anyone think about it? That's a brilliant idea. And then like 5 years later, it's like, okay, all right.
The thing is that we know this, that a lot of readers just want something familiar. And
true.
So it's, instead of launching a new character, you launch a character that is familiar and related to one that's already successful. A lot of fans feel safe reading that book.
And from a publishing standpoint, it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Especially comic book readers, superhero comic book readers, they really, they do crave that warm embrace.
But it's like anything. There's four CSI shows, and there's three NCIS shows, and there's...
Franchising, basically.
It's called franchising, and there's spinoffs of all kinds of popular shows, and that's just... It's a way for the audience to feel safe with their choice.
So, avoid it if you don't like it, but recognize that there could be some good stuff in there. I think
Flash family was great too.
To an extent,
Mark Waid, Jeff Johns era, like all those.
It was
Max Mercury and Impulse and Jesse Quick, and
that was a good family.
Stories. Yeah,
and they all sort of worked together.
Not the kids; those kids are hideous. I mean the
no, not that. Yeah, I know
extended
you mean.
Family, not his real.
You mean before whatever that. Thing
right.
was that changed, whatever that epoch was that
exactly.
changed. I hear you.
Totally
I think Wolverine's a really bad example of is a really good example of what you're talking about, except in recent years X-23 has become super interesting.
Yes.
And so who would have thought that?
Not me.
More interesting than Logan at this point, who has been hollowed out.
What's really funny is I forget he is dead.
I'm fine with it because it was just like, oh, there's Wolverine again for a while.
Right.
And they had, I feel like they'd literally done everything that was possible with that character. I totally forgot he was dead. You're right. I was just thinking about it. I was like, well, I guess not lately.
Yeah, he's gone. Dude's dead. Forever,
what?
Josh. He's never coming back.
They killed off the son, which was fine.
Yeah, his son was awful.
And the daughter is, I really like what Bendis has done with the daughter. And I really liked what Dennis Hopeless did with her.
She's an interesting character. I like her.
Totally.
Wes A. from Newport, Minnesota writes and says, I recently came across my DVD copy of Unbreakable. After giving it a watch and really thinking about it for a good 9 hours, I think it's not only the best non-comic-inspired superhero film, but also one of the very best superhero origin stories. The only one to come close to it would be Chronicle. What are your thoughts on the film, like it, hate it? Didn't we see this movie together?
We did. We did. I think you liked it more than me then, and you probably like it more than me now.
I haven't seen it since then.
Really?
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was really good.
I came out of it feeling like it was missing something, but I've never been able to put my finger on what it is.
Right.
I think it didn't charm me. And it turned out subsequently from that, I really hated everything that he did more and more after that. And it wasn't just like once I saw the movies of Shyamalan that I didn't like, I could even apply this to the earlier ones. I was like, oh, I don't like those things in those either. So it might just be an aesthetic
that
thing.
That was just an exciting era, right? So we had The Sixth Sense and then we had Unbreakable. And it was like, oh, this guy's an interesting filmmaker. And then it just went crashing and burning from there.
He's the Guy Ritchie, and then later who's the District 9 guy.
But I would not put Guy Ritchie in that camp.
Okay.
M. Night Shyamalan makes really, really super formulaic movies.
Yes, he does. You're right. Well, so does Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie has a style, but I wouldn't say his movies are formulaic. Okay.
All right.
He's definitely made movies that are bad. The second Sherlock Holmes movie was terrible.
I just like those first two, which are basically the same movie.
Right. Well, that's true. But after that, he's changed a bit.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It is a super strong superhero movie that isn't based on a comic. It's like Hancock and Chronicle
It was interesting that Hancock was based on a comic, I think.
Was it?
Yeah, but like in the way that Big Hero 6 was.
Okay. So not really.
I'm pretty sure there was a comic book antecedent. I don't know. I think the movie was just missing something. I Sam Jackson was mustache twirling in it, and you know, it was a fun reveal and everything. But Bruce Willis, I thought, was pretty uninteresting as the hero in it, I guess. But because he was supposed to be. Wasn't he like a fireman and he was just...
He was a security guard.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, and he played everything like a dumb blue-collar guy, I guess. Or just not, you know, just not...
He's just a dude, you know? He's like Philadelphia dad.
I feel like there's a better example of this, but I don't know what it is. I did like Chronicle a lot when I saw it. I don't know that I would see it again. You know what other movie I liked was... it's not a superhero movie, but the Brad... Bradley Cooper movie where he takes the pills.
Yeah.
That was a really interesting version of doing that.
This is, from what I'm reading, Hancock was a completely original story.
Oh, no shit. Yeah, whatever. That movie was like really interesting and then not.
The first half was, and then once they revealed the thing, it was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you've got like sillier ones like my superhero ex-girlfriend or...
Sky High?
Sky High, which I liked quite a bit.
Yes.
It's with Kurt Russell, because Kurt Russell's awesome in everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, The Incredibles seems to be my favorite one of those. But I guess it's comic inspired. They all are. There's no way to not be. Yeah. I don't love it, but it has nothing to do with it being... I don't know what I don't love about it. I never have, though. It's been one of those things. I hear it coming up a lot lately. People keep sort of remembering it because Shyamalan had made such a bad name for himself. And every once in a while you'll find those people, no, The Village was really good. It wasn't. The Village was stupid. They were all stupid and it got worse from there. Sorry.
So says Josh Flanagan.
I think I want to watch The Happening just so I can watch Mark Wahlberg with a terrible script.
That
I think
was
that might
really
be a lot
bad
of fun.
Movie.
I never saw it, I don't think.
I did. It was horrible.
Something about... No, Water was Signs. What was the thing in that movie?
In Signs, it was the aliens.
No, in Signs, it was the aliens and the secret weapon against them was water. Right. What was the big twist in The Happening?
That... I don't remember. The trees were killing us or something. The trees had released spores that were deadly.
The lady in the water.
I don't remember.
With Paul Giamatti. So I was like, well, maybe that'll be... No, that's terrible. And then The Village, where they're just under an underpass.
The Village, I guessed right away.
Yeah. God. Sorry, we just gave all those movies away.
We
told you
there
would be spoilers. We did.
Chris,
I don't know if that...
Chris H. from Iowa says, first of all, congrats on the Darwin panel. It was great to see the gang all together. And by the gang, I mean all four of you. So, are we in a gang with Darwin now, Josh?
Well,
I don't want to be.
I know I'm not the leader of that gang. I'm the red shirt in that gang, and I don't want
to
be.
You're the first one to die.
Yeah.
You're the guy who we come back one day to the hideout and find you dead.
No, I'm the guy who ends up with the accounting book. And then, like, when everybody else gets killed, they find me sitting there cowering, holding the book. That's me.
Or you're the accountant in The Untouchables who
that's basically what
killed
I was
first.
Thinking. Yeah. He showed spunk, though.
Chris says, it was so great, in fact, it inspired me to go back and revisit some of your old video shows, starting with my personal favorites, The Summer Barbecue. Traditionally, those shows end with a question I ask of you now. I'm sandbagging you here, Josh.
Yeah.
What are your current top five favorite ongoing series?
I saw this question last week, and I was like, I'm not using it. And I screwed myself.
Yeah, see?
Okay.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is.
I have my app open so I can see all the current series I'm reading.
Keep them like that.
I'm going to say Batman and... I was going to say The Multiversity, but it's not ongoing. It's ending next week. So I can't say the Multiversity. So I'm definitely have Batman in there. And I'm looking at all my Marvel series, and I am struggling to find another one from Marvel.
Can you say anything other than Thor for them? And is that even a one?
Well, Thor is... I wouldn't put Thor in anymore.
No?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't put Thor anymore. I wouldn't put Captain America anymore. I wouldn't put Daredevil anymore. Maybe I can make... No, I was going to say I can make a case for all the X-Men, but no. I think it's going to be Batman and then probably four Image books.
Yeah.
Lazarus, Velvet, The Fade Out. That's it. And oh, one more.
Black Science for me.
So what are you excited about? When you see it in your stack, what are you most excited about?
Lately, the things that I have been most... like I said, Black Science is definitely up there. I think Lazarus is up there, so there's two. I like Thor. I could happen when I see it. I'm going to say that, I think, because that's one of the only sort of superhero books right now that I'm still excited for. So that's three. This is not all time, but currently,
yes.
One of the books that I get very excited about is Alex and Ada. Okay. And every time it shows up, I want to know what's going to happen next.
That's valid.
It's not even like a thing that I'm like, oh, this is the greatest thing. But it is one of those things, like, for some reason, every time that I'm like, oh, it's an Alex and Ada week, I can find out what happens next because I don't know where it's going. So we're going to go with that for current. I guess we're going current. That's totally fair. That leaves me with one spot, and that is tough. Velvet.
So say your five again.
Black Science.
Mm-hmm.
Velvet. Alex and Ada.
Mm-hmm.
Four. There's another one I just said. I don't know. I thought I just said another one.
I'll tell you mine, what you think of it. So Batman, Velvet, The Fade Out, Lazarus, and Astro City.
Ooh, I'm going to go with Astro City too. That's very good.
Because I still get really excited every time there's a new issue, and I would say 80% of the time they're really fantastic.
I'm a little different with that. Is that I get pretty excited, and then afterwards I'm always like, that was even better than I thought it was going to be. Right. Like, because I guess I lowered my expectations on it for a good number of years.
Right.
So every time it exceeds my expectations.
So there you go.
So that works. There you go.
There you go. It's less fun doing that when there's not food to think about.
It's it's easier though.
Is it?
Well, because I'm not trying to, like, I really need to get this piece of chicken out of my teeth, but also I'm on camera.
Oh, God, those were so bad for us, those shows.
Yeah.
Also, if we try to do that now, I would probably throw up on camera.
I would I want to do this. I know what we're just about to do, and I don't want to do it.
No, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would do it. They just wouldn't be as much food.
I'm not gonna tell us to just do this, but... I think a question that I would like to answer if somebody were to do this. Hold on.
Okay.
I'm making a substitution.
All right.
I'm going to switch out Thor for Southern Bastards.
Okay. I thought that's my number six, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's the same guy, so I don't have to feel bad about
it. So say it again. Say your five again.
Southern Bastards, Lazarus, Black Science, Alex and Ada, and what was the other one?
Velvet.
Velvet. There you go. So all Image.
All Image.
That says a ton.
Except for Astro City.
Astro City, yeah.
Wait.
No, that's... Well,
Alex and Ada, Southern Bastards, Velvet, Lazarus, and Astro City?
And Southern Bastards. I named six. So I have to drop one. I'm going to drop Alex and Ada, yeah.
Okay.
If somebody wanted to send in a question and ask where we are with how we feel about with artists, I would like that.
Okay.
Just saying.
We haven't talked about writers, really. These are just stories.
Lately, I have been totally into artists. That's been my favorite thing in comics. Not lately, last couple of years.
Okay, so you're soliciting questions about artists and art.
No, I just was like, I would like to answer that question, but I can't. I don't want to just have that discussion.
Okay, well, that's perfect. It's perfect segue to contact@ifanboy.com is where you can send us an email, or 888-FANBOYS-326-2697 is where you can call our voicemail line and ask Josh questions about art, artists, art history, pop art, street art, classic art, modern art, any art questions, ask them. We'll do an all Josh art question if we get enough of them. Art question show.
Listen, guys, I don't want to make him feel stupid, but I don't think this guy knows anything about art.
And people love that. People love when you say things that are wrong. So that's the perfect time.
It's almost as if he has no training at all.
So send us those emails and voicemails about art for Josh.
I don't really work here.
A couple quick plugs. We put up our Daredevil podcast just a couple days ago, if you're listening to this soon after we published. So last Friday, Josh and I and Mike Romo got together to discuss the Daredevil Netflix show. We had a lot of fun. It was nearly an hour. Good discussion. Lots of interesting topics and discussion points. And if you watch Daredevil or are still watching it, as many people still are, you can find that podcast and that discussion over at ifanboy.com. And next week is the Avengers Age of Ultron, and there will be a podcast on it. Just so no one has to ask, because it's not like we miss any of these major movies.
That's next week?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It is. It's next week.
Look at that.
So we look forward to that podcast coming up that weekend or soon after when Avengers comes out.
Yeah, and the next time 13 Hours of Something come out, maybe wait a little bit.
Head over to ifanboy.com. Come on this show. Talk about this week's books. Find all of our other podcasts, like the Daredevil podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. And that's where you can find out what the pick of the week is going to be before the show comes out. And you can also follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan and at C.S. Kilpatrick.
If you like this show, and let's face it, you're listening. Although I guess there could be people out there going, I don't know why I still listen to this. First of all, he's asking for his own questions. What a dick. And why do I care what he thinks of art? Listen, you're listening to the show, so you must. Anyway, you can leave a review for the show on iTunes, or better yet, do what you can to spread the word. If you liked the show, if you liked our show on Daredevil, and you have somebody who was like, oh, I'd like to think more about this Daredevil thing. Well, we know guys who like it when you think about things for a long time, and that's us. So you can pass those links around on your social networks or wherever. I think we're past the USB drive and balloons. I bought a USB drive. There's a 32 gig drive that's so small that I lost it within a week.
The thing is, they're still useful. We use them in the office all the time for big files between computers. It's much faster than everything.
I bought it to stick. I was like, I can put my entire music collection on here and just put it in my car like that instead of my iPhone, which just fills up for no reason. And then I lost it because I kept bringing it back in going, I'm going to move more stuff onto it. Now it's gone. So, I hate it when I can't find things. I like it when people are friends, and I hate it when I can't find things and ask me about art.
There you go. That's the show next week. Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.